Welcome to a new episode of DevSecOps Talks with me, Matthias,
Andrei,
and Timur.
Hey! And Timur is joining us instead of Julian today. But how Timur ended up here, Andrei, do you want to explain that?
Yes, so we know Timur with together. English is broken today, sorry. We know each other for quite some time. And I saw that Timur posted on LinkedIn that he and his team finished migration to OpenTofu, and OpenTofu being a big topic right now, I thought we should have Timur online and actually talk to the person in the field doing it, having the real experience, and get a feeling for how it is. So with that, Timur, would you like to introduce yourself and give us a little bit more details about the migration you guys did?
Right. So my name is Timur Bublik. I live in Berlin and work at a company called Tier Mobility, which is maybe known in most European countries. It's a micromobility company. If you've seen a green niche e-scooters and e-bikes, those are probably ours. I've been working this company for quite some time already, first as a senior DevOps engineer and now as an engineering lead for the SRE team. And we are managing our infrastructure completely with Terraform, or we used to manage it completely with Terraform until we moved to OpenTofu.
Yeah.
Cool. And yeah.
How did it go?
It went... Yeah, it went pretty well. Essentially, we are using Spacelift in order to drive our Terraform stacks. And as you know, the change of the license of Terraform has impacted many companies that are profiting from this tool. And essentially, we were disabled from getting any updates of Terraform starting from 1.5.7. Yeah. And in the beginning, it was not an issue for us at all because, well, what's the big deal if you're a couple of months behind? But as the amount of features we're missing is piling up, so we're not moving anywhere forward. And as there's a virtually, I guess, zero chance. Oh.
Yes, sorry. Was it because Spacelift is a competition then to Terraform Cloud that you couldn't get any updates?
Yes, because...
Yeah, okay.
The way the new license works is that I suppose they would have to pay some high fee like this, or maybe they would not get any access to it at all. I'm not sure about this. We were still able to use any previous Terraform versions in Spacelift. We could select any version and run it. But looking at the future, there was no way forward with Terraform.
I see.
So it's adoption of Spacelift that was the main driver of the decision to migrate.
Yes, that was it. I also was, because of course, essentially, right now there's not that many features OpenTofu has that Terraform doesn't have.
Yeah.
The only promising thing is the state encryption, which I honestly find pretty interesting because we manage our vault secrets with Tofu, and essentially, the state file becomes the secret vault, and it starts feeling a little bit dangerous, especially when you store it in an S3 bucket that is pretty easy to accidentally open to the public.
Yeah.
So this is a nice feature to have.
I think that state encryption is in beta right now or alpha in the latest OpenTofu.
Something like this, yeah.
Yeah, so we started testing it, I think. So that's... Yeah, do you think we will see a lot of these like community things that community wanted now in OpenTofu that HashiCorp didn't really want to kick in? They had that, of course, in the cloud, but now in the community, you can more force this feature that community wants.
Yeah, it looks like OpenTofu community or the core developers are listening to what community was calling for a long time. And while they're not obviously going to implement every single feature, it looks like they have their own view onto that. And this view is interesting too.
Wonder if it will go as it was with Terraground. Originally, Terraground was just a wrapper around Terraform. They would link the Terraform binary in, and they would just add some handy shortcuts that you could use. But Terraground today is, I would say, a tool on its own. There are so many, I would say, non-backward compatible features in Terraground. And by this, I mean features not available in vanilla Terraform. So if you start using those features, like remote state lookup in plans and stuff like that, you just cannot go back.
Yeah, you will be locked in. But also, even if we wouldn't be using Spacelift, I would still be leaning towards OpenTofu because while if you're using Terraform and at some point if you're not yet using Taco Tools, which we'll probably come later to as well, if you're using Terraform, the only Taco Tool you will have to choose is Terraform Cloud. And with OpenTofu, you will have everything that is there on the market.
Yeah. Can you describe a little bit more about this Taco Tool?
Yeah. So Tacos means Terraform automation something orchestration software.
Okay, yeah.
they worked really hard to make tacos.
Making tacos. I think it's only about a song, but it made burrito. Isn't it like a taco song?
Terraform? I think C Terraform is not even the start of a word, it's part of another word.
Oh, maybe. It's just for cloud. Otherwise, cloud. It's always cloud.
Anyways, it's a platform for running Terraform with a pretty much neatly tailored workflows that allow you to manage your infrastructure easier than with just running Terraform plan in a traditional pipeline.
Ah, cool.
And you could still use Atlantis, aren't you, with a vanilla Terraform?
I think so, yeah. I think that, so there's a couple of open source solutions that still are possible to work with Terraform. There's also Digger that is also kind of open source, might be able to work with Terraform, I think, too. But you obviously cannot go to Spacelift, you cannot go to N0 and stuff like that. So, and Terraform Cloud is also quite expensive. So, and that they will probably capitalize on that as they are now have kind of locked in a lot of companies in their ecosystem. Basically killed all the competition or most of competition. They can do whatever they want now.
Yeah. So in the migration, was it as described it, like a drop-in replacement? Do you like change the binary or did you?
So the migration was mostly driven by my teammate Alicia. I was supporting her, but essentially the idea was that all you need to do is run Terraform plan and make sure that you have no changes. And then you switch the binary and then run plan again. They also say that you should do a lot of backups, test your backup, that's the recovery and stuff. Yeah, we didn't do that. We have like 250, 300 stacks, and it would be quite a lot of work.
Probably test one or two, and then you just roll through with the rest.
Yeah. Well, essentially, running plan, we because we have so many stacks, some of them are broken from time to time, and it is also might make sense to do some sort of a cleanup job to make sure your infrastructure is in healthy state anyways. So we kind of combine these two tasks into let's say housekeeping and upgrading to Tofu. We fixed all the stacks and we manage all our Terraform/Tofu stacks in Terraform/Tofu itself. And so the Spacelift stacks are available in Spacelift provider. And the only job we had to do is to switch the binary from Terraform OSS to OpenTofu. And that's it.
Right.
And there was one small thing is that in some stacks we had the Terraform version constrained in the Terraform block, I think, predefined. And I think there was like one or two places where it was kind of fixed to, let's say, run on 1.5, and that would break with the OpenTOF 1.6. But other than that, that was it. It just worked.
Well,
right. So, I guess the message is, while it's early days and they're very close and very compatible, great now. Don't wait another year.
No, I'll probably say, better to do it now, or if you do it later, at least try to not engage with the features like testing that Terraform has introduced. And there was something else interesting I forgot in 1.7.
Did it for each for the moved block, I think.
Oh, that. Something like this. Something with moved blocks, yeah.
That's huge. For each support for the moved blocks. That's really good. I mean, it's missing, and it's good they added it. And do you run the developers or the infra engineers run the Terraform locally? I guess they would also need you do all everything through the
We do everything through the space lift. Essentially, there's a feature that Terraform Cloud has that we cannot use because it was owned by Terraform. Is that the ability to connect your local Terraform binary to the cloud. But with Spacelift, there is a space CTL that allows you to do local previews of your whatever you're working on right now without need to commit or have a Terraform binary at all. So I even doubt our developers have Terraform binary. If you're working on something and you're not sure if or how it's going to work, you just run a local preview. You see that the plan goes through, and then you commit and then see how it works.
Oh, that's really nice.
I think it's a big improvement comparing to something like Atlantis, where you have to create a pull request and iterate on that one. If you do everything through the tool, because I know some teams, they run Terraform locally and then they do deploy through the tool.
Yeah, we have a role that the developers cannot assume, so it's almost impossible for them to run anything locally.
Okay. Yeah, you could basically block it by blocking the access to the state bucket. If you can't
access the state bucket.
Another question that we discussed in the pre-show. I'm the old style guy that looks into the pipelines as end-to-end pipelines with Jenkins, GitLab, GitHub, what have you. And by that, I mean, you have a pipeline that developer can see from end to end where his change or her change is. They do a commit, then there would be some unit test, then there would be Docker build, for instance. If you do Docker, it can do just only serverless, but I guess even with serverless, you would need to produce a zip package to upload, and then you maybe do more tests, the linting, then you would do deploy. And for that, you probably run Terraform, Spacelift, what have you, maybe AWS CLI if you do AWS. And then you promote to the next environment. And through that, developer can see where the change is. And there are many voices on LinkedIn and internet in general saying that that's all crap. You're missing out. You should be using tacos. But I'm a little bit confused in a way that how developer would see, how that would look like for the developer and how developer would see where his change is.
So a tier where quite an easygoing and forward looking, and we moved away from Git flow towards a trunk-based development, and essentially you just work in small branches that you merge in the end of the day Normally, the workflow used to look like first deploy and staging, then promote to production. And at the same time, Spacelift is also triggered and is running the Terraform or TOFU in staging and production stacks as well. But I mean, in Spacelift, you can also do promotions if you want to do that. If you go through pull requests, it runs plan and you can promote so that the thing will be deployed from a pull request, which for us was quite a little bit of a pain sometimes, because when someone promotes it and then you don't know about this pull request existing, and you just run a plan from the master, and you see changes in your, like, where are they coming from. So yeah. We disabled this feature, and essentially we just encourage people to not do all of that and run from master. And at some point, for the reason of cost reduction, we also decided that we do not benefit that much from the staging environment, and we got rid of staging. And our staging environment wasn't a proper staging environment where you can do end-to-end test and whatnot. So some services were able to work somehow to look like they're really working, and some were basically just about deploying a pod and going through the readiness probe. So we didn't benefit from that for $25,000 a month, and we decided to get rid of it. But coming back to your question, obviously when you have a separate tool for Terraform, it becomes more decoupled from the software workflow development. But it all still depends on what CI/CD you use in general. Because, for example, in GitLab CI, the space lift plans are tightly coupled to your pipelines. So they are actually shown as a separate job inside of your pipeline, which makes it more logical. It didn't work, I think, the same way with using GitHub and Circle CI. But it all depends on what your setup is.
Okay, so let me deconstruct that. Yeah. So you would still have a classic CI/CD tool with a pipeline. And in there, compared to just pushing to master and then the Tacos tool just start doing its thing, you still have a pipeline that drives the deployment process, and when it's time to deploy, you would call the Tacos CLI.
They're unparalleled. Because the thing is that, for example, in Spacelift, you basically select the folder that the Spacelift should track in your repository, and only if you change any of those, and you have a push policies. So you can select which kind of files in which folder will trigger Spacelift to run. And if you do not do any changes in infrastructure, then it is what it is. You just push your Docker image and build and do whatnot. So they're quite decoupled from each other, even though they live in the same repository.
Now we need to ask more questions. So I hear you mentioning Docker, and I hear you mentioning pods. It doesn't look like you're using ECS. Sounds like there is some Kubernetes involved.
Yes.
And then the deployment process, it's, I would say, very rare that people would use Terraform to deploy to Kubernetes. So I would imagine that you would use Terraform to deploy everything around Kubernetes, and then you would have some kind of JSON generation thingy that does Kubernetes part.
Exactly. We do deploy all infrastructure around, all secrets, the Kafka topics, the databases, whatnot. We also deploy our the cluster itself and some of the basic add-ons in it, and then the what's about the service itself, it's managed in Circle CI with Docker being built and pushed to the ECR, and then the Helm file runs the rollout and picks up the new image, and yeah, there we go. We also installed Argo CD, but we didn't get there to actually move all the services into it.
Right. Yeah, so that's more like shifting towards the GitOps, which is super popular in a Kubernetes world. You could even do the Terraform. I mean, there are the operators that allow you to run, or like a crossplane that kind of manages the AWS infrastructure for you.
Yeah, you could do that. We partly leverage this in a maybe a little bit wrong way with Spacelift, that there is a drift detection available where you can set up to run every now and then. And for certain stacks that we feel that are really important to reconcile, because there are a lot of changes all the time, we run them, for example, every 15 minutes. And we enable automatic reconciliation. And we also don't really are afraid of reconciliation breaking anything because we have so-called plan policies, which are based on open policy agent rules, written in Rego, that will protect, for example, from deleting a world secret or a database and things like this.
That's interesting. Yeah, so the pipeline then would look like Docker, you run Terraform, so you need to create ECR repos and stuff around it. Then you would do Docker build, you push to ECR, and then the Terraform part is already done. Then you just run whatever you use to deploy to the Kubernetes. I think, I know, if you're not using Kubernetes, it actually could be a little bit different. So, in a way that... hold on. I just realized that they're still thinking of a Terraform step or like the Spacelift step as a part of the pipeline, which is actually running in parallel.
Yeah, it is running in parallel. It's completely decoupled. And in some cases, it could even cause you sort of a race condition if you commit them together and you say, hey, I want to connect to the database, but the database is not yet created, then you might have an issue, of course. Yeah.
See. Okay, so there is a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's the same setup as we run as well at my company. We have one pipeline for Terraform, right? Infrastructure changes, and then one for the applications, which is also using Helm. I started looking at Argo CD. I started looking at it for infrastructure services, not for the deployment. And it's another topic we can talk about, but it's a little bit harder when you have more operating stuff running. If you just deploy application like Helm, super good. Deploying like I don't know, root cluster or Elasticsearch cluster, more issues, right? But it's a nice, right? Terraform or OpenTofu and then application.
So is that necessary?
Yes, please go ahead.
Oh no, I just want to say that it's not necessary to run Terraform or Tofu plan every time you deploy a new version of your software, unless you deploy your software with Terraform.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I wanted to mention, that in a Kubfellow project that I've seen and have access to, that runs on ECS. So with ECS, for deployment, you call AWS APIs. And then there is a tendency or temptation, if you like, just to blend everything together so you could deploy your service and all underlying infrastructure together within the same call by using Tacos tools or Terraform on your pipeline. But then if you want to go the Terraform orchestrator part way, then it probably makes sense decoupling the version switching. So for instance, if you're deploying the ECS service, you could just switch the task definition. You can generate task definition using AWS CLI, and then switch that in the service using AWS CLI or something else, while deploying the rest using the Terraform. So then it might work, because otherwise might be a little bit confusing. And there are more possibilities for it.
But you so focus on ECS. We like Kubernetes, we like that space, servers. I mean,
if you take Lambda, it will be the same, right? It's the same temptation, because if you're using the cloud operator API to deploy the software, not Kubernetes API, so like, or like not Nomad API. So if your software orchestrator uses a separate API from your cloud API, then this separation is easy to do because there are two different APIs to call. You could use the same tool like Terraform to call all of them, but generally you would use specialized tool for each. But if your software orchestrator and cloud API are the same as with ECS, as with Lambda, as in Lambda, for instance, you upload the new zip file to S3, you need to switch version of the zip file. Yeah. You will have the same situation there.
Yeah. Interesting. Also, they're saying that, for example, they're talking about Terraform and Kubernetes. They're saying that the Terraform module for Talos Kubernetes is really good, because it can wait for a cluster to be created. Well, that's another thing as well. Can we go back to one of the OpenTofu questions I have? Modules. Sure. What happened with the modules? I thought that was going to be a big thing. Didn't they say that the other modules that you can download, wasn't that like they blocked them so you can use them in OpenTofu? What happened with that?
So from what I understand is that the OpenTofu has their own registry, which is probably mirroring the official Terraform registry at a fairly good pace, meaning that everything that is published there is republished into OpenTofu as well. And since the license for the providers and modules hasn't changed, it just works. In the FAQ, they do mention that if there is a provider or module missing, switch back to Terraform and see if it's actually there. And if it's also if it's there but not in OpenTofu, then please create an issue. But we haven't faced this issue yet.
No. I think they published maybe only most popular. Like if they mirror, I think they mirror maybe like Terraform AWS modules, like those that would have a lot of downloads. I'm just logged into the OpenTofu registry to check if the like 5XL models are there. They're not. So I think we would need to register with them and just push to a... I think it's just a matter of registration because they probably else, as a Terraform registry, just watch your repositories in GitHub. And then as soon as you push the new release, they would make it available in the registry. So we probably just need to update it to make sure if there are people using other models and they could switch to OpenTofu, they able to do so.
I guess they don't want to maybe blindly copy all modules when we talk about modules, that because the modules themselves, when someone will introduce, let's say, a test in 1.6, then this will break for OpenTofu already. So I guess they're just probably either careful or maybe they wait until people actually actively will submit that this is a TOFU compatible module. Also, the reason maybe that we didn't notice it because we don't really use that many public modules. We like our opinionated ones to limit what developers can do. And we run it in the private registry that we developed in-house.
Right. Okay. It's good to know. I had a question that I just forgot. Matthias?
But it felt like it came together pretty nice when this started with OpenTofu and Terraform, like how will it go? What will happen? People are like, no, nothing will happen. Then say something will happen. But now it just, if it's this easy to migrate already, that's something.
Just came back. So on a topic of the models, and as I said, we have a couple of models, and some of those using Python lambdas, which you need to package with the dependency and pain in the bag. So we actually got a feedback from someone using those models saying we cannot use this particular model because you either request a Python version that is not available on Terraform Cloud Worker, and you cannot run Docker on Terraform Cloud Worker, apparently.
Mm.
So they're like, those are limitations when you go to the Terraform orchestrator. If you don't control the
runtime,
the worker, you might have an issue with certain models like ours. So we're probably, from the next releases, rebuild the zip files ourselves, publish them to CDN, and have those as a default option. But then if people want to ensure they're getting what they think they're getting, they can still build the zip files themselves. So we'll have a fallback in the models. But that was something interesting that we ran on them.
And something to keep in mind. Therefore, HashiCorp doesn't want you to run arbitrary code in their very isolated workers, pre-made, tailor-made for certain things. Yeah.
It's very understandable because you're dealing with the people's secrets there, and running random Docker could be a very easy way to extract those secrets.
Yeah. But it's also a way to limit what you can do, right? And that could be one of the things with OpenTuf. If you open up, then it can run anything, right? Then it's open and more innovation can happen. So I would say that's...
You always want to have a balance, right?
Yeah.
Between security and innovation.
Yeah, 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 always, always.
We actually benefit a lot from running things on the private workers because, as you probably know, Terraform/Delphi is a, I wouldn't say kind of a good tool for many things, but it's probably not the job for certain complex logical transformations of data. For example, we have something we developed in-house called Service Registry, which is like a Terraform-driven repository with the configurations of our services that is responsible for giving basic access to the teams and developing and bringing up things like specific stacks for each service separately. And at some point, we just realized that it's so hard to map teams to services to stacks to Kubernetes roles to everything that it was just easier to do the same in Go than trying to do three layers of nested for loops in Terraform. So we switched to Go, and but this essentially means that we need to run a binary somewhere before Terraform runs, or maybe in between, so that you invocate it, you transform your data and then spit out the result that is then taken by Terraform in order to actually create the infrastructure. And yeah, this is one of those nice things of having a private worker.
We have a similar experience with a complex environment. So as you say, you have stack, right? So in stack, you would have dev stage production environment, I would assume. And the dev stage production environment will be a different Amazon account, for example.
Yeah.
Each stack might be being deployed to each own accounts, which means that the production account for one stack will be different from production account to another stack. And you need to have that mapping somehow. Developers need to have their AWS CLI or AWS Vault, AWS Config pre-generated somehow with all those account IDs and know where it's what. So you need to have something to manage that complexity anyway. And I do really like the idea about having a service registry, service map. So the as amount of stuff you manage grows. I mean, when you go to the zoo, you need to have a map, because if you want to find a giraffe, you know you go there. If you want to find tigers, you go this way. And
so
software zoos, they tend to grow, and those service maps help developers who are new to the team to find where is what and who to ask at least.
Actually, this is the reason why we call our backstage environment Nerd Zoo.
Uh-huh.
So you can find all services and all documentation over there.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're running backstage, but you didn't call yourself a platform engineer. That's
yeah.
Are you in transition?
No. We had it for a couple of years ago already, and but we all mostly use it for documentation, for the service catalog and documentation.
Okay. I see. Cool. Anything else we should ask that we haven't asked?
I think I took up like the modules, the split. It's nice to hear that it was so easy to change.
I have one. So imagine you talk to a friend and the friend never heard of Spacelift.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be the three killer features of Spacelift that you would mention to them?
Oh, just three? Oh, that's hard.
Are there more?
Are there more?
I think like my number one feature that really helped us a lot is the policies, the open policy agent policies that allow you to control what can be automatically deployed, what requires approvals, who can approve, when approval is required, when it's not required. So you can decide on a lot of things, because before we used to babysit certain changes done in Terraform environment because you trust developers, but they're still eventually not always they don't always have enough expertise to do this, a safe decision. And we used to always require some approvals for certain things. And that was taking a lot of our attention. So with the policies, we basically said, you can never do this. You can do this, but only with approval from someone else from your team. And that reduced the amount of requests to us regarding Terraform infrastructure by 99%, I would say. Unless there's some really weird change.
Can you do that like with OPA policies and apply them to Spacelift? Or how do you...
So you can create... basically, you write your policy and then you create... You can create a policy resource in Spacelift and you attach it to a stack. And then it is running against your Terraform plan during runtime. But it's only about plan policies. There are also push policies that can say, hey, ignore anything that is not ending with .tf or .yaml. There's also trigger policies that can trigger other stacks when one stack finishes, which is a really cool feature I like. Because as I said, we have this registry, but it would be quite a big stack if it would manage everything. So we decoupled it for having things related to teams, things related to alerting infrastructure, to Okta identities. So we have a chain of triggers running through these trigger policies. And then there are notification policies that you can attach to notify you on Slack or webhook or somehow else. So this is quite a powerful feature that we really liked. The second thing I really like is one I already actually mentioned that is not that always brought up in conversations is the local previews with SpaceCTL. It enables me to develop in much faster pace than otherwise. I think that the only way faster would be developing locally, but then you always have an issue of your environment being different from someone else's environment. And if you're working with Lambdas or something else that is compiling something, then you have a lot of problems. The third feature I like, I really like the way the UI is built in order to accommodate the Terraform workflow in a way that it really structures well all the changes. It shows you the you can have the normal plan being shown in a kind of a sort of a emulated terminal window, or you can have just a list of resources being changed with the small signs plus, minus, or tilde, I think it's called. And then you can expand actually and see the changes of each resource separately without needing to scroll through whole thing, which is really nice. Then another thing of the UI is the resource graph that shows you what resources have been deployed, what are the details of those resources. I think it pulls it from the state file, and there's you can also apply sanitization so that people cannot see, let's say, vault secrets through the resources graph. And it allows you to easily debug like what's happening, was my resource actually deployed or not, what is the ID of the resource created, is it the one that that matches in the UI to the UI and stuff like that. So those are, I think, the three things that I really love about Spacelift.
Oh, cool. Good stuff. Makes me want to try it.
But I think with that, we're coming up on 40 minutes and it's time to close down this episode. So thank you a lot, Timur, for joining.
Thank you for taking time. Here.
Yeah.
That was my pleasure, guys. Thank you very much. Yeah. Call me back again.
We will. And notes and links will be in the notes, right? As usual. I'm looking at
if you have more questions to Timur, we will have his LinkedIn profile linked in the show notes, so you could reach out to him, say how you like the episode, or ask more questions.
Yeah. And with that, thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the DevSecOps podcast with Matthias, Andre, and Julian. For more podcast and notes, go to the webpage devsecops.fm. Thanks for tuning in.